This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Hi, this is Christopher Daniel Barnes, your friendly neighborhood Spider-Man, and you're listening to the Canned Air Podcast.
Everyone, and welcome to another episode of Canned Air, your tribute to pop culture. I am Jeremy Colley.
And I am Jack Doherty.
And I am Randy Hardenbrook.
And we've got another good episode for you this week, people. Joining us, my God, this woman has done so much and is still...
I was going to say, she is doing so much.
But you might know her best as the slave girl from the Ten Commandments, the old Charlton Heston Ten Commandments, mm-hmm. which is like a classic. Mm-hmm. You know, in my family, we used to watch it every year.
I've never seen it. No.
Oh, Jackie.
Wow.
That's when you guys were talking... Wow.
No spoilers yet. It's coming.
Just sit there and eat your Jell-O, all right?
She was also Sissy in Family Affair. And boy, that show is a hit from the 60s that just keeps resonating through time. I mean, it still has a pretty loyal fan base. Mm-hmm. But our listeners might know her best as Firestar in Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends. We welcome Kathy Garver to the show today, and it was fun talking to her.
It was a very good time.
I always say that after every introduction, seemingly, but the truth of the matter is it always is fun. There's only been one time it hasn't been fun, and that's on Patreon, so you'll have to go over there and see it, and that was a long time ago. But no, damn, this was a great conversation. We had so much fun talking with her about how she started acting, about her time on the Ten Commandments, her time with Family Affair, her many books,
voice acting,
and of course, Firestar from Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends. So good conversation ahead. But before we do any of that, don't forget to find us on Twitter at CannedAirPod and on Instagram at Canned_Air. And if you really like what we're doing, Randy, where should they go?
Check us out on Patreon. We've got amazing catalogs on there. It's kind of like the Canned Air Plus, if you will. Mm-hmm. You know, we've got... hours of content, episodes.
That's an understatement. At this point.
Different tiers. We've got the traumatic episode. We've got, you know, so much for different levels. But if you can't, you know, throw some money our way, go to your podcast player of choice and just give us a review. You know, every little bit helps. And yeah.
Absolutely. Those reviews, again, it's not just us fluffing our ego. It really helps in, you know, whatever provider, like Apple, iTunes, for example. The more we get there, the more Apple will push us out on their podcast pages. More exposure. So that is big support right there. And yeah, the Patreon. Again, the Canned Air Patreon Pod, Canned Air Radio Theater, the Comic Vault. Oh, there's all kinds of different series that are running on there. Canned Air Classics. We just put up Randy grilling me and Jack with 80s trivia. Go see how well Jack and I know our 80s people. You might be surprised.
Born in the 70s and don't know the 80s. I don't know.
Yeah. I was born in 81 and, well, we might be divulging too much. Just go check it out, people. And don't forget to go over to evergreenpodcast.com, the network that has so graciously hosted us and allowed us to be a part of their network with so many other great shows. We've been with them, about a little over a year.
Yep.
I think. And it's just been a match made in heaven, I think.
Absolutely.
I love it. So check them out at evergreenpodcast.com. And I think we're ready to get this rolling, right?
There you go.
Without any further ado, here's our conversation with Kathy Garver. Kathy, I want to thank you so much for taking time to be on our show. It's such a pleasure to have you here. Thank you for being here.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here. There's a lot of other places I could be, and I'm liking it right here.
Oh, well, we're so grateful. Thank you. How's your day going so far? Looks like you have some beautiful weather outside the window there.
It's very warm. It was like about 91 degrees. And I live in Bell Canyon, California, but the weather here has just been gorgeous. It's getting all nice for the Super Bowl on Sunday, but it was a hot day today. But I got a lot of stuff done, you know, and sometimes I like to do this on Zoom because it encourages me to clean up my office.
Right.
It can be a real disaster.
Yeah, so. I just use blankets to cover up the messes in here. So.
Well, I used a comforter. You see that brown comforter right there? It hides myriad boxes of different kinds of things.
So I'm not alone. I don't feel so bad now. Awesome. Well, again, thank you for being here. And let's just start with, you started acting at a very young age, like very young. How did that happen? Where exactly did you start? Exactly how old were you when you got into acting?
Well, when I got into acting, I was 8, but I started tap dancing and singing when I was 3 at the Meglin Studios in Hollywood, which was the same place that they discovered Shirley Temple. Now, my mother, of course, all the mothers at that time thought that their daughter would be the next Shirley Temple.
Of course.
I was Kathy Garber, but I'm glad I'm me because Shirley's not with it. But they were fabulous. Ethel Meglin started the studio and I was with them until I was like 15, 16. And I learned to sing and tap dance and ballet dance and all the skills that help one go on in their career and keep it going as long as I have.
Sure.
And then you obviously very quickly went to the set of the movie The Ten Commandments. What was that like as a 9-year-old, just being on a set and a movie of that scale? Was that kind of like a big playground for you? Or?
Well, actually, I was only 8.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I don't want to get any older than I am. I was just hired to be an extra, and who even knew what that was? But I remember going and getting big sponges in the makeup room first that were cold and they were putting dark makeup on. And I felt when you're that young, I think you really absorb things through the senses, what you see and what you hear, etc. And so I was feeling cold and then I was feeling scratchy because the costumes were scratchy. And then we went on to this big set. We were shooting the Exodus part of Ten Commandments and they were shooting that at Paramount. And there were animals all around. What I love animals, still do. But these were donkeys and oxen and sheep, oh my. And so I was in heaven and I thought, well, this will be really lots of fun. And it was. Until I got splashed when the Red Sea closed.
That movie was such a staple of growing up. I think it was on television every year, like around maybe Easter or something. Mm. I can't remember if that's accurate or not, but...
It still is. It's on every Easter and they colorized it and they brought it up some of the technology, but you keep the core of it. And some of the effects, I think, are even better than all the green screen and everything. I think sometimes our sci-fi or some of our even animated things, but the sci-fi things, they forget about the story They it's just about the effects. Of course, we had a pretty good story to begin with the Ten Commandments. But people seem to like the Bible. It's so
Everyone kind of knows it, too. Yeah. It's kind of weird.
Yeah,
it's kept its popularity, hasn't it? I had heard you say in another interview, speaking of the practical effects, that the sea parted was actually Jell-O. Is that accurate?
That is accurate. Yes. And just actually a month ago, I was surfing or whatever. And I said, you know, I always say that that's Jell-O. Is that really true? Because that's what I was told. And yes, and it is accurate. And it was they got that effect of the Jell-O moving and everything that looked like the sea moving. And they used like little miniature soldiers. And it was, yeah.
That's
they were
incredible.
Very inventive.
It was like totally set Jell-O?
No. It wasn't totally set.
Okay.
Yeah. So it was still the, you know, going back and forth. So they, you know, to have the movement through right. that. Are you a cook? Do you know about J-E-L-L-O?
I do. It's when you want to, it says to wait 4 hours and you wait 2 and you'll check it and shake it and it still kind of has that little skin on the top.
Yeah, right.
Ready,
and it's wiggly.
Spoonful. Yeah.
Yeah, Lucille Ball. They were one of the sponsors of her show when she was on the radio, and she would say, "Jello, everybody." Okay, that's Lucy. Oh,
that's incredible. That, what a testament to how effective practical effects are. I mean, for mm-hmm. something like that to work, that's incredible. I would never have guessed it was Jello.
Imagine mm-hmm. the person that decided it. What about Jello?
He said, not strawberry, not raspberry. Isn't there a blue raspberry? Yeah, we could use blue raspberry. And maybe we can mix it with a little lime Jello. And so I can just hear the people figuring out the color.
Are there any other practical effect things you can remember from that film set that we might not even know about?
Well, I always remember when the walls were closing in on the little lady and she was about to be crushed. And Moses comes in and he pulls it back. Now he was actually, you know, holding those walls back. And I don't know, it was a paper in effect, but we were on a paper mache mountain and that the water was all in big vats. Here, I'll have to set up the scene because they did shoot some of it right there on Paramount Studios. And they had configured these mountains that were paper mache, and then they had dirt right on the floor and around the perimeter of the set, right where the catwalks, that they put these great big vats of water. And so the Red Sea closing was actually these great, when they were getting close-ups and even for the main scene, they were putting, they would get the water as when DeMille says, okay, action, and all the water descends.
Wow.
Yeah. Incredible. It was real water.
That wasn't Jello.
That wasn't Jello. That was real water.
This is making me want to watch it again and try to pick out other things. Like, I wonder how they did that.
Yeah. That's water.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Very clever.
Of course, we have to mention Family Affair, where you played Sissy. And this show, obviously, as everyone knows, was a huge, huge hit. And I have to admit, I haven't seen it in some time. I remember watching it when I was a child. My mother was a big fan of it. And another prominent memory I have isn't even really from the show, but when my sister was real young and got her first pair of glasses, my mom used to call her Miss Beasley.
She was, it must have been a little round black glasses. That's the kind
of thing
Beasley wore.
So, yeah, mom,
well, it's actually never been off the air. It went after three seasons, we did five seasons, it went into syndication.
Right.
And then after that, it went over to TV Land and MeTV. It's on MeTV. It varies back and forth between Decades, which is also owned by WCIU, the network that has it. So they have Decades as well as MeTV. So it goes back and forth between them. But now it's also on Amazon, Amazon Prime. It's on Hulu. Who knew that we were going to have all these platforms for it to be there? And that's why, you know, when you're doing the pop culture, and that's your, I love the name of your podcast, the Canned Air.
Oh, but you know,
pop, yeah, I think it's great. pop culture and comics, and we'll talk maybe about Firestar.
It might come up.
Yes. Oh, it's definitely coming up for sure.
But a Family Affair is very steady and has a whole new audience, and the generations love it. And it's really kind of a very nice, quiet, soft place to go with all the chaos. And I'm going to die tomorrow. Oh, my God. I have
1.6.
Well, one more degree and I'm going to be dead. Oh, no. Anyway, there's so many things. Guys. Okay. It's all right. I'm going to look. Family up there. Not to do
that. So one thing I read online was that you were playing a 15-year-old, but you were closer to 20 in real life. So, I mean, looking at pictures of you, you know, from the cast, you obviously could pass as 15, but was there any extra thing that wardrobe was doing with you to help that effect take place, like bows in the hair, anything to that effect?
Well, I know that when the first season, especially, and we all supplied our own clothes except for Brian and Sebastian Cabot, who played Mr. French, had a uniform, or, you know, a gentleman's
right,
butlerish kind of uniform, and Brian had these wonderful suits by Botany that he never wore, because primarily wore a bathrobe. But when I said, oh, 15. Well, that was so long ago. So I used to wear like little smocked dress. Now, three guys, I don't know if you know what a little smocking is, but that was very popular and is a very young kind of style. Now only babies and really toddlers wear it, but it was kind of a style. I would wear those little smocked dresses, and I would wear bows in my hair. Anissa would wear the pigtails, and she was a little older too. She was almost 9 and she was playing a 6-year-old, but she wore the pigtails. But yeah, and I had to fight with some of the producers. I said, excuse me, this is the 60s. And once we got, you know, and maybe into the third year, and I wanted mini skirts. Yay. And I said, no. And I said, why? And they were right. And I don't a lot admit somebody else is right, but the producers were right. And Don Federson, who had My Three Sons, which was another wonderful family show that was on for 9 seasons, said, look, we're keeping this as classic as possible. We're not giving in to the trends of the day, because then people aren't going to relate as much. So he said, no. And my wardrobe then was, you know, just right above my knees and nothing really super flashy. And we paid, not homage, but we did some things where they had beatniks, and I tried out to be a beatnik and on that lifestyle. Can I do this with my jeans and my other things? And I said, no, I'm going back to my family, which was hard to do living in a penthouse apartment. And it's so funny, my latest book, and I'm sure we'll talk about my books, but yes, my latest book, that we can't see it. I think that I'm on Zoom. I'm here. Can you see my book microphone? The Family Affair scrapbook. A friend of mine, Barry, we did a talk show together backstage with Barry and Kathy, and he's a historian and a Hollywood historian. And he actually found the building where our penthouse was, right on Fifth Avenue. And oh, wow. It was really, I would have liked to have seen that. And that would have given me even another dimension, knowing where I lived in the actual building, because everything was done in LA and we're supposed to be from New York. But it was rather an impressive building, beautiful. So, yeah, I gave it that little hippie apartment and went right back up on my nice elevator with the man holding the door and through my double doors into my beautiful penthouse. Tough. It was tough.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure it was hard. You read my mind as far as books. I wanted to touch on some of your books that all seem to be somewhat centric around the Family Affair, like the Family Affair Cookbook, for instance, is the first one I have here. Now, is that in any way like meals or food items that were somehow on the show, like where you guys are sitting at the table eating? Is that the kind of things that the recipes are for? Or how does the cookbook relate exactly to Family Affair?
Well, when I first wrote this, and this was my very first book, I had been working on my memoir for a while, but unfortunately, I had a house fire, house burned down almost, and it took all of my notes and everything with it. So I went to a cookbook, which was much easier to write. And the way that it's styled is that each character has his or her own chapter. So there's Mr. French that has very, you know, gourmet recipes in it. And then I have Sissy Sizzles that and then the twins, Buffy and Jody, have simple things to make. And then Uncle Bill has potent potables, which are how to make all kinds of cocktails, especially in Manhattan, since we were from New York. Awesome. And also there's a chapters about where are they now type thing. So that was my first one.
How cool. That's very interesting. What a cool take on that. I would have never guessed. Now,
also, well, you've got to read that book and I guess you've got so. To cook some, we'll some have, of the recipes in there.
We'll have Jack get it. He's the resident cook here.
Yeah.
I'm lucky to heat up SpaghettiOs.
We're sick of Jell-O over here. So.
Yeah, you should do that. That's what is this, like a fire department? This You all live together and each one has its own.
I'm not even kidding when I say I almost had to call the fire department a few weeks ago when I was trying to cook.
Really?
I had the kitchen full of smoke and the back door open like, oh, please don't let the fire alarm go off, please.
And where were you, Jack? Couldn't you save him?
I was probably at my apartment cooking something myself.
Yeah, he's over there making gourmet food and chef's hat on. I'm over here on fire. Okay, your next book I want to touch on, Surviving Sissy, My Family Affair of Life in Hollywood. Is this just mainly about your life in Hollywood during the show or just in its entirety?
Its entirety, right up to the day that I gave it to the publisher. So wow. It starts out when I'm a babe. Then goes to when I'm a babe. No. No, it does follow my whole life. And actually, and I didn't mean it to be this way, but then it kind of evolved that each chapter is like you're making a blanket and they're all allusions to different kinds of things. This is like, you know, the silk part or, you know, weaving a new thread, which means it then translates over, well, I left one thing and then started something else. So it has that kind of motif throughout the whole book.
That sounds interesting. Now the one you just held up there, that one just came out this past September, correct? The Family right. Affair scrapbook. Can you tell us a little bit about what's in that book?
This is my newest book, and it's a compilation of a lot of pictures that were taken from Family Affair and then surrounding that particular era. And it also has a whole chapter on notable guest stars. We had some wonderful people that appeared on our show. Ida Lupino, who I absolutely adored. She was so good. And she was so good that they brought her back for another show that she did. And they usually didn't do something like that. And then there was Robert Reed, who then went on to do the Brady Bunch right after us and kind of stole our thunder because there's the little girl there that looked an awful lot like Anissa with the two little ponytails. Yeah. And she even had a little doll and yes, they admit it. Yeah, we just took that right out. And so they started, added some more kids. And so that was a nice little family of situation comedy that took off. But the scrapbook is really fun. It's very bright and fun. And there is a whole chapter on memorabilia. Memorabilia was just, you know, and different things that were being created for the shows was just coming into being. But then they just took off with it. And there are coloring books and viewfinders and lunch pails. And we were a worldwide phenomenon because, again, I think we were one of the first shows that ever went to China because we were not offensive and because it was family and it was because of love. And those things are worldwide.
Right.
Very accepting worldwide.
Sure.
Sounds like one hell of a fun book.
Yeah. Oh, it's fun. Yeah.
And the listeners can get these books at kathygarver.com and even some of them autographed, correct?
Right. If they go to my site, which is KathyGarver, kathygarver.com, there's a merchandise page. And then I have 5 books. The other one is my holiday recipes for a family affair. And there's also Ex-Child Stars, Where Are They Now? Yes. Which is a very interesting book. And if you go to my site itself, I can autograph it for you. You can also get them on Amazon, and that's fine too. I will still get a royalty if you get them on Amazon, or you can even go to the publishers directly. So, but I'd love people to read them. I think that, like, you didn't know about some things, like with the Ten Commandments, and there are a couple really wonderful stories in my memoir about the Ten Commandments, but they encapsulate a certain era, which I think goes beyond just you know, this was a fun show to do, but what was happening? And, you know, the Vietnamese War was going on. And I actually went to visit a lot of the hospitals in Japan and Okinawa and while that was still going on. But it's also what has happened, you know, all through from like when I was born. I'm certainly not going to say that the year, but from the year I was born up till 2022, when I'm still alive and kicking.
Now, the X Child Star book, I'm very curious about. How did you choose who you were going to cover in this book?
There are all TV child stars from the 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s, and that had a TV series. Okay. So we're going to do a sequel to it, and then they will be child stars from the movies, still from that classic era. So that's ongoing. And I have a book that I'm working on. My new book will be TV Dinners, which goes along with a pilot for a show that we're doing called TV Dinners. So
you just keep yourself busy,
yeah,
don't you?
I was just going to say.
I do. You know, devil's hands and all that stuff.
Well, I would recommend people get them off of your website because an autograph, I think, just personalizes it, makes it so much better. I mean, that's how I am anyway. We're going to take a break from our conversation with Kathy right here to jump to a commercial break, but don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Looking at your IMDb page, there are just so many different projects you've done, and there must have been so many different, well, not must have been, there were so many different characters you portrayed over the years. Was there ever a character or, you know, somebody you wanted to portray that you haven't gotten the chance to yet?
Well, I actually just talked to a friend of mine who is a producer, a big producer, and has done a lot of things. And he has new things on the horizon. He's doing a thing with Susan B. Anthony. And I've always wanted to do like Mary Todd Lincoln or something. Ooh. Patty Duke did it. And I would be I'm little, I'm like 5'1". And so I like, you know, to do like some historic figures that I could get really my teeth into. I would like to do that.
Maybe somebody will hear this now and be like,
Yes, or write one for me.
All right, well, let's jump over to your voice acting career, because I think this is how we prominently know you, some of these amazing characters you brought to life. First, of course, Pepper in Chuck Norris' Karate Commandos. Boy, was I obsessed with that cartoon growing up. I still have some of my action figures from it, actually. But Miss America in 90s, Spider-Man, you were in Tom and Jerry Kids. You named some more, Randy. You said some earlier. I can't.
You were in Dennis the Menace, I believe. The real Ghostbusters, the original Ghostbusters that wasn't affiliated with that, I believe. Just quite a, just go to her IMDb. It's
very lengthy. And I didn't mean to throw you on the spot. I'm sorry.
You're fine.
But most popularly probably known as far as the voice acting goes as Firestar in Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends. And so where does your voice acting part of your career begin, and how did it begin?
It began when I had a commercial agent, and he said, well, I want to send you out on this interview for a voiceover. Now, this was a long time, maybe 40 years ago. Strange, since I'm like 38, but it was that long ago. And I said, what's a voiceover? He says, oh, that's okay. You'll just, you'll know. So I went on this commercial for tuna. And the producer there said, okay, I'll say, I like tuna. And I said, okay, I like tuna. And he says, okay, now say it a different way. A different way? What's a different way? And I said, I like tuna. Okay. All right. I'm glad you do. Now say it different though. Say it different. Okay. I like tuna. Thank you very much. We'll call you. And so I said, well, I don't know how to do this. And so I went and I took lessons. So now I can say, I like tuna. I like tuna. I like tuna. I can say it. I can say it 100 different ways.
All right,
and I'm sure each one would be just as entertaining. That was awesome. Yeah,
thank you for that.
So that's how it started, and but you, and then I taught. Voiceover for 22 years, and how to develop characters and audiobooks, how to narrate audiobooks. I've won like 5 Audi Awards from narration of audiobooks. I've done about 75 of them.
Wow.
And they are all available on audible.com. Just put in Kathy Garber and a whole little list will come up of my books that you can buy and listen to. The one that I just finished, which I loved, was In the Presence of Greatness, which was the oral rendition of Patty Duke's book that she did with Bill Jankowski. And he was a good friend of hers, and he interviewed her, and there's just loads of parallels and from her life that she discussed. But I had played her friend Monica on the Patty Duke show. So she was a friend of mine. And why it was so important to me is that because she was a friend, and this was the last book, and it came out and right after she died. And so it was like she was right by my side when I was recording this. And so it was really an otherworldly kind of experience to me. And so that was very, very enjoyable. I liked doing the book and paying homage to her, which is now the right place to put in that word, because we were not paying homage to Beatniks. I had to correct that.
So when you were doing the audiobooks, is there a particular genre you kind of go for, or is that just it kind of whatever comes up?
I like doing fiction. I like making all the different kinds of voices, because you can do like 60, 70 different kinds of voices in a fiction book, a man's voice and a little girl's voice and all kinds of different voices. So I enjoy doing that, probably because I'm totally nuts. And this gives me a wonderful outlet to let all those people inside me get to talk. My poor husband of 40 years, he just sits there. He's so sweet. He just sits there quietly, and I'm going,
but he knows magic's happening. He's just letting it happen.
Yeah. Maybe. I'll tell him that. It's right before Valentine's Day. I'm making magic for you, honey. Is that what that is?
All right. So Firestar, what a cool character she was. So enjoyable. And I love one thing about her. Is she's very much the same thing happened with Harley Quinn in like the Batman cartoons. It happened with her. She didn't have comic origins before she came to screen. She was born for the television show, right. But then became this favorite of the fans. And then afterward got her own comic series, and she's had action figures and all kinds of cool things. So I just find that to be very cool about her, aside from just how awesome the character herself is. But how did that opportunity come along?
I finally had learned how to do voiceover. So I was with ICM, I think, at the time. And I went on the interview. And then I was living in San Francisco at the time. And so, of course, I got it. So I would have to fly back and forth from San Francisco to LA. At that time, we didn't have these wonderful Zooms and you can,
Right.
Get to do voiceovers from wherever you are. So I went on the interview. But I was thinking it was so interesting with Stan Lee, because like Harley Quinn, this was the first kind of characters that he had made for the TV. And later on, like Firestar had like a 4 mini series of just herself, which was really nice. And just this year, I mean, they had brought out action figures of Spider-Man, Iceman, and Firestar previously. But just this year now, see, if we were doing this on TV, you could see this wonderful little Marvel action figure that came out last year in 2021. And I really like it, except she has like 2 heads. She has a detachable head. And I really don't know if I really want to be decapitated, but it's quite nice. And they have Miss Lion, the dog.
Oh, that's right. That she came with her too.
Do you have that one?
No, not yet.
We're going to have it now. It's going to be on the shelf. Yeah.
If you write me, I'll autograph it for you. It's not on my website. I should put some of them on my website because I have like a box full of these wonderful characters. But you see, in my life, in my career, I'm very happy, you know, to be involved with things that all became classics, and I'm very. You know, it's nothing that I did that I'm ever ashamed of having done.
Oh,
but the icing was that Ten Commandments is a classic picture. Family Affair is a classic picture. Now, what about Firestar? This, you know, even though that we did Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends in the 80s, it's still super relevant today. And because it's all story, as far as I'm concerned, they are good because they have a story to tell. And each one of the Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends cartoons, you know, it has the problem, what we're going to do, we're going to solve it, and then we solve it. But it's interesting, and people can follow that train. And I think that's why, you know, Disney bought Marvel, and it's on Disney, you know, like every Saturday. So it's, again, another revival. And I'm working on the Aunt Sissy prequel sequel. And we were saying before that Family Affair seems, you know, kind of centric to what I have done. I feel as though I'm like the standard bearer of this classic show, and that there are so many people that like to come back to the nostalgia. That's why I think all these networks that started like when TV Land, but then, you know, MeTV, and there's a new one called Classic TV Reruns that I just hosted a marathon for. And we sold a show to Retro TV called Idle Chat. I was a producer on that. So I like the classic. I mean, somebody has to remind people of where these cartoons came from, where the TV came from. To keep the history going so we can grow from
that. And it was also good TV versus some of the stuff that's out here now.
Oh my gosh. Again, and because it had stories instead of like one-liners, you know.
That's all it is anymore. Yeah, exactly. That,
you know, and it has heart.
And it's looking at everything Marvel's doing today, it's, you know, it's just a box office giant that seems to just keep gaining momentum. And, you know, all of that, Marvel Comics was in danger in the late 80s and, you know, into the 90s. And what really saved it were shows like Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends, which that show in itself is definitely, I mean, you can't watch that show and tell me that's not the groundwork for the 90s Spider-Man cartoon and the 90s X-Men cartoon, which is also coming back, this year, right?
I think
this year, yeah.
So, I mean, it was those shows that really got the ball moving again with Marvel and has brought it to where it is today. It's just, it's incredible.
Yeah, and they are. I think they grew on that foundation, and because it was so successful, they said, "Well, okay, let's spin off some of these other things."
And it's funny how, like, even the '90s, well, even X-Men. I mean, they don't even try to draw the characters any differently. They look like they walked right out of Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends into this new show, almost exact. But do you remember when you first saw a picture of Firestar for the very first time? Do you remember what your impression of her was?
I really thought she was great looking. I said, gee, I'd like to have a body like that. And I guess I can pretend. See, that's really what's kind of fun about being an actor. You know, you can pretend that you have beautiful, long, you know, hair and this great, perfect body. Well, my body's not bad, but I mean, she's really tall and great looking.
Right. Now, as far as voicing her, you know, we've talked to so many voice actors, and there's always a like a chemistry to bringing a character to life. Well, I used a little bit of this person for inspiration mixed with this person, for example. Where does Firestar's voice come from? Who do you mix together? What do you do?
Well, I personally think that you can't be anybody other than who you are. Okay. You know, that is the base for everything. So many reactions that you're going to have, if you're really true and you're in the moment and you are voicing a character that's reacting to a different character, it's coming from your heart and from your spirit. Mm-hmm. So that's my underlying philosophy. So with Firestar, and the imagination. I do, at that point, I was using a lot of imagination. And instead of like taking a prototype of a person and mixing it with a different person, because I have so many people inside me, that so I would take, first of all, the heart and the age, you know, okay, that's how old she is. And then she's a hero. So that always colored that I was the hero.
Right.
It wasn't some animated thing that's still on a piece of paper. I am the hero.
Right.
And so that makes it, A, I think it makes it more real. And B, it makes you want to go to the insane asylum quicker. Who's this person? Why is she doing that? But, you know, in a pinch, I'll take a prototype. And I, there's a lot of times when I'll just do it, you know, a Katharine Hepburn. I say, oh, yes, it's been so nice meeting with you all. You know, just quickly, and you can just take on someone like my dog. Funny when we got the a puppy, and you go, figure out where this dog was coming from, and I would barking.
That would be a lot of fun playing with the dog that way.
Oh yeah, and my son and his future, my future daughter-in-law, live with us, have been for 7 years, but. They had the dog, and they got, I gave them the puppy. And so, don't do that, Mom.
You keep on doing it. It sounds funny.
Yeah. Yeah.
So obviously now with the MCU kind of bringing all these amazing characters to life, is there anybody that you would pick? Obviously you're Firestar, but would there be any actress that you would see kind of taking up that role in a live action setting, or somebody that you would think like, wow, they'd be really cool in that? In that role?
Probably Nicole Kidman.
Okay.
Ooh.
I could definitely see that.
Yeah, I think Nicole Kidman would be good.
Got my mind reeling now.
Yeah.
Putting her face on the, yeah. I have to get on Photoshop and see what that really looks like.
Yeah, she would be good. And I'll be Aunt May.
Oh,
all right. You know, Aunt May. And this was, she was one of the characters in that as well.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. Yeah.
I can play Aunt in the live action. I'll play Aunt May. I'd be a perfect Aunt May.
You hear that, Marvel?
There it is.
Hear that, Marvel? Hear that, Disney? Right. Yeah. I guess it's a half hour.
Oh, so it is. Yeah. All right. Well, we will let you go then.
And of course, because I'm a good marketer, I don't know how good I am, but I do want to remind people that they can go to my website. They can like me. That's how I always think of Sally Field. They like me.
Yeah.
They really like me. If you want to like me, you can go to my Facebook page, Kathy Garber fan page. And you can also like me on Instagram.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much, Kathy, for being here with us today. This has been an absolute pleasure. You are funny, too. Oh, my God, are you funny?
Well, thank you. Uncanny, I guess. Okay.
Gotcha.
All right, have a fabulous weekend. May the best team win. And have a great Valentine's Day.
Yeah, you thank too. You. And thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
All right, and there it was, our conversation with Kathy Garber. Wasn't that awesome, guys?
That was a blast.
That was fun. Yeah. She's a lot of fun and very funny.
Yeah.
Had my sides splitting.
Yeah, she did.
I like tuna. She jested, but I could listen to her do those takes all day, hear how many times she could make it different. You know, it'd be so interesting. But, again, if you guys want to check out Kathy, again, kathygarver.com. Everything she's got going on is over there. And again, on her Instagram is KG Sissy, and Twitter is at Kathy_Garver. And again, we want to thank her for taking time to be on the show. What a great time that
was. Absolutely.
So with all that being said, Jack, what do we have on the website?
Go to cannedairpodcast.com, where you can listen, like, and subscribe to the show. You can see the special guests, who we've talked to. Check out some of our YouTube videos. And if you'd like to be a guest and promote your work, send us an email on our contacts page.
And you can find us on Twitter at CannedAirPod and on Instagram at Canned_Air. And again, people, the Patreon. So many different shows on there. So much content that you can get for $5 or $10 a month. depending on what you're willing to give, the Candair Patreon pod, the Comic Vault, where we just sit and talk comic books strictly, canned classics, episodes that have been pulled from 2013 and 14. Here, our very first episode, how we got our start. Boy, how we've changed. Yeah,
a little bit.
The traumatic episode, the episode that went horribly wrong and shattered our egos for a good about 3 or 4 weeks there.
Yeah.
Boy, that was devastating.
Yeah, it was tough.
That was hard to listen to, and I wasn't even involved in it.
Yeah. I mean, it was like years later when we were recording the commentary for that episode to put on Patreon. And even all those years later, after the wounds healed, I was still nervous to hit record.
It was like therapy. We had to bring in couches so these guys could lay down. And
yeah, we had to take this. Breaks and like pat each other on the back. Like, you all right, buddy? You all right?
Had hugging pillows.
Yeah, it was an ordeal. But again, candairpodcast.com, that Patreon link. And what else, Randy?
Again, check us out on evergreenpodcast.com. Check out all the other great shows. And yeah.
There it is. I think that's going to do it for this week, people. So thank you so much for listening. Thank you, Kathy, for being on the show once more. And until next time, I am Jeremy Colley.
I'm Jack Doherty.
And I'm Randy Hardenbrook.
Be excellent to each other, people.
Giddy up.
This has been a Canned Air production.
Are you tired of seeing your teen or young adult struggle on a path that clearly isn't the right fit? Is your teenager confused about which direction to take after high school? The future of work is changing rapidly, and our kids need to know all of the options available after high school so they're empowered to make the choice that is best for them. In each episode, we explore the latest trends that are shaping the opportunities of today and tomorrow. I'm your host, Betsy Jewell, and this is the High School Hamster Wheel Podcast.